Thank you very much, Amos. Thank you all. I seem to stand before you suddenly unsuppressed. I'm very happy that you didn't take the weather as something to stop you. I'm very pleased to be able to talk to you again. Jack, I thought, gave a lovely lecture tonight, and I would like to thank him for that. It's like a way of relating to people. And Amos very kindly has come to introduce us, and I'm delighted that he did. It makes the relating or relatingness so much realer. And I'm delighted, too, to see some of my old friends who realize that I have not changed for the worse. That I'm still going strong. With the line that I first had the privilege of meeting you, being with you, relating to you, with you, in the various guises. So, as Amos so nicely dispensed with titles, identifications, and so on for me. I've realized quite a lot since I gave myself the chance to, and I looked in many areas where I had not looked before. You see, what is the world's first clear? Really? Well, you reach something. Whatever it is, it's you. And more and more and more, as you relate to people and discover that they are infinitely as creative and beautiful as you might ever dream to be, and that they have this potential, then you are no longer separate from them, say, as the world's first clear, or this or that, or whatever it might be. You realize that you are clear for yourself, or whatever it is. Why give it a name, even? In those magnificent moments of my breakaway from those things which I did not understand until such time as I saw them, granted them the beingness to be, I realized something, and I would love to tell you. Some of you may not have done the Scientology clearing course. Those of you who have done, I think, will maybe understand me better, but I'll try to make it so simple that anyone could understand it. On that course, there are particular things that require to be confronted in relation to the existence here in the humanoid form in the physical universe on various planets. Say, we happen to be on this one at this time. These things are not evil. Those who came before us into the physical universe established a structure that would help us to familiarize ourselves with the physical universe, help us to identify shapes, form, see ourselves expanding, contracting, whichever we chose to do, see ourselves looking into those things which go to make the basic agreements of being humanoid. This is what that consists of. Now, as you confront these things, why should it have been something evil that happened to you or me or anyone else? You grant those people who came before, like I was a jolly come lately in the world of Scientology, and I couldn't, when I got onto a platform the first time, and it was here in Los Angeles, and I had to introduce myself, say, as this new creation, the world's first clear, I looked at those people, and most of them had been there holding that bridge in place long before I even knew that such a thing as Scientology or Dianetics existed. And every one of those people had helped me to get where I got. And so I thanked them all. I realized that it's because of people that any data, any technology can ever be, number one, produced, and number two, aligned into any form you like. So if any man stands up and says, I am the only source, no one has helped me, this man deludes himself and may very well delude you, because without you, the people, the power, the infinite creators, there would be no technology, there would be nothing. You are the people who have produced the power, you and all your brethren of the human family. And the human family is something that for me has become progressively more beautiful. And no matter what I have done or not done, I have always found that people, somehow or another, have been so readily willing to contribute through my stupidities, through my lack of seeings at times, and help me to be. And the first time I realized just how wonderful people were if you would let them be, I had realized it more and more and more. But last year, I had quite a strained year with this body, because of various things that I had committed myself to be doing, but also because I was beginning to be aware that I was betraying you, who I'd come to love, and who to a large extent had come to love me in the way you let me be. And I realized that I was leading you into something that wasn't totally true. And I'm not doing anything down here, you know, like I'm not saying anything is bad. Every experience I have had has contributed to my power. But I was realizing that I wasn't telling you all. And maybe because I withheld certain things, you were being, or not you, but the people to whom I was talking, were being slightly misled by what I was apparently representing. What I wanted to be, and was not, as some people have thought, the ambassador of one man. What I wanted to be, so long as people would have it, was the ambassador of mankind. I did not want to be stuck to any ology, and I said so many times, I am not a so-and-so. I use this ology because I find it helpful, and I've, you know, found it a means with which I have been able to help so many people. Anyway, came towards the end of 1969, and I was getting to a stage where I couldn't really be sure that I could stand up long enough to finish a lecture. And if I fell over, you know, if really I mean this, if I fell over whilst I was lecturing, people would think something else. They'd think, well, sorry, that guy, there's something wrong with him. Right, I haven't discovered all the answers, and I do not know everything. But I learn all the time, and I learn from a tremendous number of people. But what I realized, as I was reaching that very touch-and-go point in the existence of this body, was when I got onto the platform, and every time I had said I would be there, I would be there. And I knew that I would make it because I began to see again what people will do. And I would get onto the platform sometimes, and I would always ask them to have a chair ready just in case I had to sit down and I didn't have to fall over. Because weird things were happening. And what used to happen was, as I reached the platform, I get a tremendous sort of shuddering blast here. It was like an electronic beam, and I think it was to a large extent my own realization that I might not be giving people the total story, and that I wanted other things to be changed before I led them to a certain destination, and that when people were heading towards that destination, that various things were happening that wasn't quite what they expected. That was neither here nor there, except that I felt that I was betraying, and I was squeezing myself down in relation to using the body that I have to do what I was doing. But every time that I got onto a platform feeling that way, within a matter of seconds, the life, like you did tonight, the life just poured into this body, and the agreement that I could be there just to get through what I had to get through, to convey the message I had to convey, came every time from the people. Although I am a source, I know that, so is each other one. But in that particular time, there was not one person there who didn't flow right to me what I required at that particular time to do what I had to do. And there again, I discovered something more about mankind. That's about every one of you. You know, you can be infinite creators, but I want you to see, just in case, as Jack said, there is some negative intention that slipped into your existence somewhere and you haven't yet discovered it. I want you to look very carefully now at the extent to which you are creative. You know, creative creators. One can also be destructive creators. One can create destruction or create creation. Somewhere along the line, sometimes if we're semi-unconscious or, say, semi-alive or down in the dumps or way down, you know, in relation to relating me to me and to other people and you to you and to other people, and the whole sense of relating to and relating with sort of somehow seems to be going out the bottom. In times like that, one could make an intention or a goal or a purpose that you forget about. And yet, with all the other marvelous creative things you might be doing in your existence, this thing gradually pulls you, as Jack, the beautiful example Jack gave. There you are at 29, and all the other purposes for creation you've got there, and yet suddenly you drop dead. And you didn't want to, but somewhere along the line you made this decision and totally forgot about it. This is very real to me, because I did just that, and some of you may know and some of you may not know, but I'll just tell it briefly, so those of you who have heard it before, please bear with me. But in this lifetime, when I was 33, this body died. Now, what happened for this to come about? Well, I'll tell you very briefly. I was very attached to my mother, and my brother, who was a year older, my sisters a year younger, were very attached to my father. And our mother died when we were 4, 5, and 6, and I was the middle one. And when she died, and we were my father became attached to me briefly for a little while, and then other things happened. But as we were standing next to the grave, my father gave me a little flower, a poppy, an Iceland poppy, to throw in, instead of throwing the sand in, to throw this flower. And I threw it, and as I threw it, I looked up to Dad and I said, I'm going to die at the same age. Now, he said, oh, don't say that, you know. So I didn't know why, and I never looked at it again. Just never looked at it until there I was. I had done many things, and I apparently was quite bright. I had been through university, and I'd learnt a lot, and yet at the age of 26, this body had its stomach removed because it was turning cancerous. And by the time it was 33, it was stretched out and gone. And the most amazing thing was, as I receded from this body, I realized that I was betraying. And I was betraying because I didn't know something about me. And so I came back just very quickly. It was just out, looking back, going away, and suddenly, no, it would be the most terrible thing to do. I do love people, and the fact that I cannot show them through a body that I love them, this is just to go away and get all sulky and disappear, because I cannot express something, is a betrayal. I must come back and learn what it is I have not learnt yet. And so quickly I came back, and it took me about 3 months to learn how to walk again, and then I went off to study some more. Anyway, the long and the short of it is that I still wasn't totally cured, and when I was being audited one day and the pain was tremendous, I suddenly went back during the auditing, the process that was being run on me. I went back to that period where I was standing next to my mother's grave, and I had never forgotten that I had thrown a flower in and that I had said to my father, I will die at the same age. I had never forgotten that, so it wasn't like that was being recalled. But for the first time ever, I said to the auditor, why did I say that? And so I immediately burrowed into that a whole collection of command circuits that I had been standing working out whilst the coffin was going down into the hole in the ground, and I'd been doing all sorts of things. Now, there was my father, he was crying. There were all those hundreds of people who had loved my mother, and they were all upset. Lots of them were sad and crying, and I had been crying. And quietly I was looking, what do you do about a situation like this? You see, and then I had decided that the best thing to do would be to be my mother. So unknowingly, but making that decision, you see, to be my mother, I then immediately start calculating, well, if I'm my mother, what price do I have to pay? And finally come up with a conclusion, well, I have to die at the same age. And I decided, that's all right, I can die at the same age. To the only thing I said to my father was, I am going to die at the same age, you see. But all those things underneath, which had gone towards that one little expression, those things that were down there, I peeled them off in this auditing session till I came to this problem I had given myself, the intention there to become my mother. But of course, such an intention at that time was impossible for me. Maybe in the next year or two, when we can change our bodies, and mock up something different, you know, if we want to erase this one and mock up another one, it might be possible. And I'm not saying that it's, as we are infinite creators, that these things are impossible. One doesn't have to be stuck with the same thing forever. However, the point is that in this particular lifetime, I had taken that purpose on. And because I am a creator, and I did not take responsibility for that thing which I had sowed into the pattern of my own lifetime, so it was being run out, no matter what I was doing above it. That pattern was being fulfilled. I was trying to be my mother, unknowingly trying to be it. And of course I'd given myself, as you can see, I don't know whether I need to go into one of these bottomless things to indicate, but I've got the wrong equipment in the first place. So, you know, it was setting myself a totally impossible problem. And yet there it was, and I was fulfilling all the attributes. My mother had her stomach cut out, I had my stomach cut out. And now this could very, very reasonably be called heredity. You see, that I had inherited the same endocrine gland structure as my mother, and therefore was tending to die of the same thing. But it wasn't so at all, because the instant of discovering just that, what I had been trying to do, I'd been trying to be my mother, and the moment I got that, the pain just blew, and I've never had it since. So the point I wanted to indicate there is we are infinite creators, and because we are, when you stand there and you might be a little child, you can search your own lifetimes for just some little dangerous thing you might have left there that could trip you up in your moment of triumph. Just some little thing like that that could be moving as a sort of undertone. Just quietly, someday it'll catch up with you because you, who are a creator, didn't take enough trouble to tidy it up and remove it. And you are tidy and you are clean. So, you know, I am saying this as an illustration of that point Jack made because it is a very, very important point. One is so infinitely creative that, boy, if you sit there and you've got a little child's body and you're not quite sure what you are at that time, you know things, but you do not know that you know. And you are conforming to various laws, rules, regulations, ideas, concepts, and opinions that a child is a child. And so at that particular time, what decisions you make from the viewpoints of a child. Like you make the viewpoint, but you do not consider yourself as a being. You consider yourself a child, so you make that. And it's very powerful. And it runs all the way through a lifetime. And it can, very well, unseeingly, dominate a lifetime. So that you would appear in the end not to be as creative as you are. I'd like you to look now at, here we are, together, in this room, at this time. Somewhere an intention was made. It might have been yesterday, it might have been the day before, but also it might have been trillions and trillions of years ago that we agreed that we might meet somewhere, sometime. So we have some, which we have at least, Jack asked you to look at the room, you looked at it. He got you to look at each other, you did that. So here we are, in these walls, in this room, with certain common denominators. The common denominators, for instance, of those things which we consider humanoid. We all have humanoid bodies. This is a common denominator that we all have right now. We are all in this room right now. We are all in Hollywood, part of Los Angeles, right now, with our bodies. We are all in California, in the United States of America, on planet Earth. If you look at it, you'll find that we have a fantastic number of common denominators. And so here we are. Now, then, you, besides this, have yourself. Now, you see, we have the common denominators that will always keep us linked together in some way or another, no matter how we try to shut it out. So one of the lovely ways of beginning to discover oneself is to look at, first of all the common denominators that you do have, that we do have, that we've agreed to have, because we have them. And then if this guy next door to you becomes a little more tolerable, and you become a little more tolerable, and even if you thought somebody was your enemy, suddenly he's not, because as you begin to put for yourself the common denominators of the existence that we have now, then you begin to see, well, we have this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and then you begin to see, well, I did anyway, that we have certain common denominators in relation to the problem of existence. You see. And what are these? And then you begin to sort those out. And you see, finally, say, one would see. And I don't ask you to believe me in what I'm saying now, to believe anything. I would rather, you know, that I was known. What I'm indicating now is something that might be of interest and might be some possibility for you. And so as you strip yourself of the common denominators, gradually you are freeing yourself from things which have tyrannized over the mind of man for I do not know how many trillennia. Like the things man feels he has no right to look into, because some scripture somewhere said it is dangerous for you to know what you are or how you are. Right now, for instance, how many of us are really, really human? Really part of the human family, really, freely, you know, infinitely, creatively, part of the human family, free to be this. Most of us here are pink-bodied or white-bodied, if you like. Some of us are not. So this now is, instead of being a tool of the game of existence, it's become something that is senior to me as one of the whole of the human family. Now, you see, we've got, then I might be a Christian and somebody else might be a Jew. Now, this again becomes more important than being a human, of the human family. Someone might be a Scientologist and someone might be some other sort of ist. And again, this is becoming senior. And all the time you will see that you, the infinite creator, to the extent that you do not research out for yourself those things which deny you the knowledge of you, because you are letting them. You don't have to be sort of all bolshy about it. This would be part of, say, a re-evolution. It's a pity it's not, that people don't put revolution and just put another E in there and call it re-evolution. You see, because we are now evolving again, and it's re-evolving because, say, somewhere along the line we knew much more than we know now. But as you bring out a new thing, a new philosophy, a new ology, and you get more people to take this and say, I'm the Scientologist now, they just dispense with all the other things they've been, say, or a lot of them. But they don't tidy it up and say, well, you know, why was I that, and then run it out totally. They don't look at why they discarded that particularly. They leave it there sort of as a just dumped on the time track, and then they move into another thing. And so now they have an actual fact, and although it appears to be a great tool, and it could be, they have an actual fact, another burden. They have another ology with which they are, in which they are going to dress themselves, and so see less of themselves, just simply as man. What I, you know, am working towards, and hope that we all are, is that man shall realize himself first and foremost as part of a human family. All the other things are the tools of existence, your color, your, whatever religion you choose, whatever nationality you choose, whatever of these things you choose to use to enhance your existence and to play your game, these are less than you. And they always will be. So somewhere, you know, we must remove those barriers, and so that we can emerge as human beings, I think maybe for the first time, as a free human race, a really free one. And there's no danger of our disconnecting from each other, you see. But we really will emerge, not with this as the only path or that as the only path. There are as many paths as there are people on earth. And say you decide to use this ology, and it take you use it and you get yourself so far. And now, for various reasons, you cannot get any further with that. Must you stop looking? Every time you stop, you don't only betray yourself, but you betray everyone else that you have anything to do with. And they're also betraying the person who is saying, I am the only way. You're betraying that guy too. Because anyone that you say, yes, you are the only way to, and you stick him with that, you are trapping him. So it's all right to know how to trap, so long as you know that you are trapping. See, because you trap the guy at the other end, who is being compelled to think he is the only way because no one else is saying to him, hey, old chap, I found a way too. And the other one says, I found a way too. It doesn't have to be done in any sort of recrimination or any sort of animosity, because in the long run, whatever we use to get where we're going to get, your way is going to be your way. Each one of you, as my way is my way. And as you grant me the understanding, the love, the empathy to have my way, so we should grant to each other this thing, you know, the right, if you want it, whatever words you want to use, that you shall find your way, using whatever you can get from anyone else. And in the long run, it's going to be your way, because, like, we've got our common basics. You will look for yourselves at what, you know, do we have in common at this particular time. Well, we've got that we're humans and so on, and all the things that I mentioned earlier. But there is still you. There's still you, that precious, precious something, kerneled in all of this. And you are greater than it. Whatever considerations over the centuries or the trillennia have somehow or another led you to believe that in order to be acceptable, you have to agree to be less than so much, that you cannot live unless you accept this or this or this, and all your potential gradually disappears. Well, there is still that you which is greater than all those things. And there's no reason on earth why one shouldn't be able to sort them out bit by bit. Now, this is only a guideline to how you might evolve a technology for yourselves. Now, I was auditing my friend Amos the other day, and I've asked him if I may talk about this, and he said yes. So we were just checking over something, and I was running the purpose process that I've worked out. It's a, you know, like an intention that's been thwarted, and I was auditing someone in South Africa, and I was looking across at why didn't people achieve what they wanted to achieve when they used the technology of Scientology. Because so many of them had come to me and said, well, look, I've agreed to be OT6, but something's wrong, you see, and I did a test and I did so-and-so, and I'm terrified of telling anyone now, but I want to talk to you about it. What could it be? So I said to the person, what purpose did you have? Why did you ever want to use Scientology? And he said, oh, I'd forgotten all about that. And of course, he'd been put onto an assembly line. Doesn't mean to say the technology's wrong, it's just the approach was wrong. Instead of having his purpose thoroughly looked at and sorted out before he ever came anywhere near an assembly line of levels, there he was being run on the unrecognized purpose, and you know, going through somewhere. And I discovered this as a common denominator from most of the people who came to me, and I asked, what is it? So when I got back to South Africa, I wrote a process, and I ran it on myself, just to peel off whatever intentions I had right down underneath there that had never quite come through. And I began to realize that you came for one purpose, and you came for one purpose, and another one came for another purpose, and that if I just said to you, no, sorry, you just leave your purpose there, and I'll declare you in a condition if you don't, and then you know, I'll put you on this assembly line, and then you'll run all the way through, you see. But people were doing this, but they were running on the unrecognized purpose. Your purpose, you know, the precious thing of you, is your purpose, it's your life. You have the intentions, and who dares superimpose other intentions on you? You cannot say, we are going to clear the planet and force clarity on people. What you've got to do is say, come, let me show you some things I have learned about getting clearer and safer in my own freedom, my own realization of me, and maybe you might find that it is a worthwhile thing. But if I superimpose the purpose of clearing on you before you have reached for it, well, we aren't going to get very far, because when it comes to the end point, you are going to have to be a walking definition instead of being you, you see. This is where that falls down. Now, I'm saying this because I do feel this amount of responsibility, because I have sort of influenced many people since clear became, say, reality. And this is my clear. This is my life. I showed you what I could of it. I tried to make myself as freely observable as anyone could be, and I've continued to do that so that you may see me, because I never want you to trust me. Never, never, never. Just if you would know me, it would be the greatest thing you could ever do. Know me. Then you will never have to have trust as a motivator ever again. You see, and neither will I, because if I can come to you and say, but I trusted you, and have all that agonized, you know, thing that goes back and re-stimulates everything I ever lost, but I trusted you. No. Then you say, I didn't ask you to, John McMaster. You just damn well come to know me. I don't want to be trusted, thank you. You see, because this is what's important, because trust, believing, having faith in, these are all motivators. It isn't that we should come to trust each other, unless you have a different meaning for trust. Let's come to know each other and find out really that there's no terror in it at all. I would like to be seen, to be known. This way I will get freer and freer and freer, and this way I will continue to interrelate with people. And I will not have to say, well, people are so terrible, you see, that I've got to sail off somewhere else and put myself on a desert island and not be contaminated anymore. Because I found that moving amongst people has helped me, and always helped me. So these points that I'm making in relation to this is that beware these things which are pitfalls. You must evolve your own technology. And with Amos here, I didn't even have any idea what he was going to come up with. But I was running this purpose process, which simply goes like this. Has some purpose been, and then I've got a whole list of things that I assess, all the things that could possibly have happened to a purpose. It's been shelved, it's been bypassed, it's been balked, it's been suppressed, it's been whatever, whatever, whatever. And then you say to the person at the end, you do not assume that you've got the right one on the list. You then say to the person, and you begin to evolve your own list, and what else could have happened to a purpose that I do not have on this list? And if you haven't mentioned what should be on that list, he gives it to you. And there you've got a new thing that could have happened to a purpose. And you say, right, and he says, the purpose, such and such a purpose has been blunted. Fine. Then you go to the next step of the process, is what purpose has been blunted? And you list on that. And you null that list. And then you get the purpose that's been blunted. Well, with this, we got, first of all, the purpose was to help people with Amos. To help people. And yet it was obvious that the list was not complete. So I asked him if there was any purpose on the list that should be worded another way, should have something more there. And suddenly he said, oh, yes, to evolve my own technology with which to help people. And suddenly I saw, like, a basic purpose maybe of all mankind, each one. There has this purpose to evolve his or her or its own technology with which to help mankind. Now, I can offer you something. You can take it and use it. But then out of that, you can become creative. You see, and evolve your own knowing that you know it will be all right. Because what I do with this then, I take it then straight back into what one could call Dianetic auditing, but it doesn't even need to be labeled anything. I simply say, locate the incident that could be causing, I keep it in present time, that could be causing such and such a purpose, which is your purpose to evolve your own technology with which to help mankind to be blunted. And I say, locate the incident. Because you don't have to cure that. You say, well, the poor guy can't confront. You give him the chance to confront. And you say, you locate the incident that's causing this. And he might get a blinding flash, he might get anything. You see, and then beware that you don't overrun it from that point. Because it is very likely that the person will try to put into words something that was never in words, because words didn't exist at that time. Does that make sense? And then you might very well, as he tries to put into words something that was long before language. Remember, language is very, very recent. And we mustn't be smug enough to think that we can encompass the whole of existence in words, because I doubt if we can. We'd be very clever if we could. And so don't, therefore, expect a technology that is made up of words to be your only way through. You see, you will have to be looking further and further and further, and be free to. If I may invite you to be free, to do this, as you have invited me many times, to be freer and freer and freer. Like every time I stand before you, I'm less suppressed, less suppressed. See? Justina, who is here tonight, and I'm delighted to see her, wrote me a poem once. I stand before you, suddenly a pauper. Do you remember that one? And I said, if only you could have said, I stand before you, suddenly a king. But I'm standing before you, suddenly unsuppressed. You know, and feeling, and just feeling better and better and better about it. And the point that I want, you know, that I really, or the points, or the infinite freedoms, call it what you will, but never be less than the words you are using, because underneath it all, you know, is you, and you look at what you look at. If you can put it into words, it'll be fantastic, because you'll simplify it for all mankind. But there will never be anything that's totally basic that's going to be made up of words. It can't be, because language was so, so much later on the line. You might be able to get a concept. Like, you know, I have stood in front of strange audiences. I stood in front of Maoris who couldn't speak English and spoken to them, and they somehow knew what I was talking about. I stood in front of French people who couldn't speak English. I've done the same with Danes and many other people, because I didn't want the words to be a barrier. And I watched them as I said them. But if I was going to make a sound, and the whole thing was called a lecture, that if I had stood here just for 2 hours and just looked at them and let them look at me, it might have had just as great an impact. Maybe it might have had more. But I did use words to see for myself whether language could be made, put into perspective, less than sound. And sound is only one part of communication. And communication is only part of the physical universe. It's a tool of the physical universe, you see. And then beyond that is me and all the people I was communicating to at that time. And could I, even though I was using the tools of the physical universe, keep them in perspective so that they were not stopping or being a block to something, and the life of what I wanted to get through was just flowing through, separate from all these things. You know, they were all being there on a gradient, but the significant thing was that one of them was being made out of perspective important, so the words could just disappear, and people could get, in the end, or immediately, say, that the delivery of what was going to flow from here to there, or move from here to there. And in actual fact, as I look at it now, I think what happened was, they mocked up this end, what was this end. They erased it, and then mocked it up for themselves. Like it didn't actually pass as a flow even. Because what moved between us was not anything that had energy or any particles or anything else on it. Because I watched as I spoke the words just erasing, and the sound and the energy and all of these things which are part of the physical universe. I watched them, they hit the ceiling, they hit the wall, they went through it, they permeated it and so on. And the people looked brighter and brighter and brighter. And as I look at it now, just recalling that for myself, I see for the very first time that they did not actually receive a flow from me at all. They mocked up something this end, saw it, duplicated it exactly, so none of us were left with any undischarged mass, and mocked it up for themselves, each one. Does that make sense to you? You know, the duplication, the as-isness, and there they had it, and it was theirs. And it was the loveliest thing to see. Now, I saw that happen with the Maoris, I saw that happen with the French, I saw it happen with the Danes, and I've seen it happen lots of other times. It's not because I'm a smart aleck at all. is because you grant me so much being to be the cloth I am, or whatever else I might be. You let me be. As I said before, and you know, I'll say it again for some of you who haven't heard, but somebody said to me on a television show in New York last year, what does it feel like to be so famous? And I just put my head back and laughed, and she said, what are you laughing at? And I said, well, I'm laughing at the fact that I have never put me, John McMaster, and fame together, and I'm not quite sure that I know what fame means. So she said, oh, well, I said, may I have a look at it? She said, yes, and in a split second or less, I suddenly got what fame meant for me. And I said, it's the agreement you get from the people of the earth to be what you are. And if that is acceptable to you as a definition of fame, then the people of the earth have been very kind to me. They haven't said, come on, you've got to change. Come on, you're a big nut. They've let me be. They've let me run on. And so I've been able to show more and more and more of me to people. So people have freed me. See, as you are seen and known, so you are free. To the extent you are seen and known, so you are freer and freer and freer. And so you become more and more and more of some sort of your own potential. Like each of us has the potential of becoming, you know, becoming. That was, a slip. We have the potential of knowing that we are infinite creators, of knowing it. Because we are. Now, if we do not know it, we will be creating, creating, creating. Look, here's this body. You are giving agreement to its existence, and that's wonderful. But inside this body and around this body, I am creating it with your agreement, and that you will have it here at this time and so on. But each cell of this body is being created constantly. And if I left this body and no one else jumped into it, then it would no longer be being created, and it would quietly phase away. And these would change, and the atoms would gradually get back to their basic structure and whatever, and some of it would go off in carbon dioxide, and some of it off in hydrogen, and so on. This body would no longer be being created as it is now, currently called John McMaster. And it's the same with each one of us. We are performing this infinite creation that keeps the body alive and functioning. Now, when you get sort of into the basic of this, looking at it and agreeing with it, but you begin to know more and more and more in relation to yourself as a creator. And then if you look very carefully at what else are you doing, you see, and then you find the other levels at which you are creating, intentions you are putting there that you may or may not know about. So what I ask you to do tonight is look at the quality of your creation. Because, you know, the quality of it. It is something that's tremendously important. Somewhere out there in the future, because the future is so much, has been so much a product of the past, the unerased past. And so we keep on somehow or another coming into greater and greater holocausts of warfare, of atomic energy, hydrogen warfare, and all this type of thing, which looms out there in the future. Now, because each one of us has an awareness of what happened before, with total atomic warfare, the whole of a planet being so radioactive that bodies like this no longer could survive there. We have, most of us, recall of that sort of thing. And if you have it, you might not have it. But you would be aware, I'm sure, most of you, that such things have happened. Right, we left it all untidily at the back, because somehow we got a little confusion that if you blow something up, it's the same as looking at it, as-ising it, duplicating it, and it's disappeared. If you blow it all up, it's gone, you think. But it isn't, because the whole action of that sits behind us. Now, because we are clean and neat and tidy, each one of us is generating into that future energy that is hitting at a particular point in the future time track when all of us are agreeing that this total thing, which people are calling Armageddon or whatever, is sitting out there, and we will have to experience it because we didn't confront it before. And this energy is part of the creation. I don't ask you to believe this, I want you to look at it, because I've been looking at it for the last 2 or 3 years, and it becomes more and more real to me as I move into that point in the future track, which is unknowingly agreed upon, when we will have to confront that which we did not confront before. And it is a totally unnecessary confusion. And when I decided that it was a totally unnecessary confusion, I didn't seem to be doing it alone. It seems like, as man had agreed with me once before to do something, so the agreement was flooding in at that particular time. It is all right to erase that unnecessary confusion that man is putting there because of the superimposed things that we talk about. It takes hours to sort them all out, but the tyrannies over the mind of man, the things that make you think you're black, the things that make you think you're white, the things that make you think you're this ology or that ology or that nationality or the other nationality, all those things which are tyranny over the spirit of man, say. The tyranny over you. All of these things sit there and block you from seeing the quality of your infinite creativity. You see. So look at this, and you look, it's not so terrible at all. Look into that future track, because we are stuck here. Say, we've got a present time. It's that which immediately becomes the past. The was the future immediately becomes the past. Apparently present time. But if you look at it, you are cleaved in present time. You are as much effect of resisting what's in the future as you are not looking at what happened in the past. Just as much. And what I've been doing with my own little bit of technology now is working it past, present, future, past, present, future, so the guy can run out what he can put into the future. And I run it simply this way. Say, I don't use the word problem anymore either, because prior to problem is intention. If you do not have intention, you have no problem. So you have intention first, and if you get the intention, you don't have to see what's countering it. The guy's going to tell you that, but it's what's countering it. And so long as you keep him stuck in the idea he's got a problem, he may never discover his intention. So ask him, very politely, what his intention is. And when he tells you his intention, he's discovered it. But if you keep on saying, you've got a problem, you've got a problem, you've got a problem, the guy's going to try and find what's stopping him, and he doesn't know what his intention is. So you ask him the more basic question. So I say, what have you done to you? What intention did you have? What haven't you communicated to you? What intention did you have? Then what are you doing to you? What intention are you having? What aren't you communicating to you? What intention are you having? Then what could you do to you? What intention would you be having? What could you communicate to you? What intention would you be having? And then after that, because could is a limiting word, what would you like to do for you? And now the guy becomes absolutely creative. Because I have a feeling that somewhere along the line, each of us has to come to that realization. I might be wrong here, so don't please believe me. That the supreme creation is the perfect problem. You know, does that make sense? And all the way along the line, whilst you think you are trying to solve problems and making yourselves the effect of unsolved problems, you are busy at the basic game of all, creating the perfect problem. That makes sense. I just suddenly discovered it one day, and it seemed to me, oh heavens, here I am. I've been pretending to myself that I'm solving problems and solving problems and solving problems. What is my intention? I suddenly discovered my intention is to create the perfect problem. Suddenly seems like somewhere way back along the line when we had this idea that the supreme creation was the perfect problem. Anyway, just have a look at that one. Try it for size, and don't, heaven's sake, wear it as your own, unless it suddenly appears to you the same way. Anyway, what else can I tell you? What I was talking about was the quality of your infinite creations, or you, the infinite creators, as these lectures are entitled. Look at the quality of it and see what impairs the quality. You don't have to kick it in the teeth, just quietly remove it. You see, and go on, like you use a particular ology that takes you so far. And then if you look into the basics, and you have used that, and you're honest about it, and you're going to do, the best thing you can do in relation to the promotion of that technology is to say, look, I used it. And because I used it, I discovered this and this and this and this and this. And if somebody comes and says to you, it's not written, you're going to be declared in a condition, because how dare you discover anything yourself that hasn't been written by someone else before, you're betraying that technology that you used. For heaven's sake, you use it, and you are going to use it and tailor-make it for yourself and use it where it's going to take you and where you're going to take yourself with it. And you will tailor-make it for yourself, and you can never tailor-make it for yourself the same as another would. And so this is part of your freedom, part of your right, part of your privilege, part of your existence, is to take something and use it your way. And never grant power to anyone who is saying to you, grant power to do this. Well, if you dare to say that before it has been written, look what you are doing. And the guy says, I can declare you in a condition, or you will be punished, or whatever it might be, and threatens you for looking where you will look and discovering things that you will discover. If you let yourself become the effect of that, you are betraying yourself first and foremost. But over and above that, you are betraying everyone else. Because there you saw something you could have communicated about and had a tremendous amount of reception for in relation to your own relating to people. And I haven't seen anyone so far turn around and be very upset about the things that Jack's put out. I've seen people take it and use it. I haven't seen anybody be tremendously upset about some of the things I've put out. They become so blatantly obvious that if you sat there yak-yak-yakking and said, I am going to make a standard tech for all mankind. Your standard tech is your standard tech. And if you look right into the definition of standard, you will see it's there that you do the optimum thing for the person at that particular time. It isn't that which is the thing that's going to cover you all, and if you don't fit, there's something wrong with you. You fit where you fit, because you have woven your own patterns. And they haven't all been bad. And if you can look at yourself now, in present time, moving into the future, with a history of a lot of loveliness, and you'll see yourself at the vantage point, don't listen to anyone who tells you you're all bad and you can't handle justice, and you can't do this and you can't do something else. You damn well can. And you look at yourself now as at a point moving into the future, at the vantage point of all the histories, of all your existences, with that knowledge available, if you just open the lids that you've allowed to come down, open them, and use these technologies that Jack is putting out and so on. Come and find out. You can do it yourself, but these things help. And you will need them till you can get to the certain stage where you will find for yourself your technology. And with your technology, you will help man. And then again, you will be individual until your final little flip of your own individuality. You take yourself where you will go. But then, when that happens, we will all be going. Everyone will have started. Like this chain releasing I was telling you about in the first lecture, I think, where I suddenly realized when I was auditing someone in South Africa that something was going on that was not being acknowledged. And I was auditing this guy, and as I came to the end of the session, I could see just ripples and ripples and ripples and ripples of something. I thought, well, what's this? And I realized, it's releases. And this guy had made, ostensibly, say, one or two states of release. But because over the trillennia he had been connected to millions of people with that particular service facsimile or whatever, particular aberration, he'd been connected to millions. Each one of those, as he released himself from that and unmarked it totally, each one he'd ever been connected to was now released from being connected to him with that. And these things had never been acknowledged, and you can see the blanket releasing. And it goes on for, as you move in this, and the bigger the individual releases that a person makes, it ripples and it ripples and it ripples, and suddenly the blankets on this are just moving out. And it is being acknowledged, and it's going right across the universe, that this one little thing that you thought was yours only actually belongs, in a way, to everyone you've ever been connected to with that so-called aberration. And as you release yourself from the pressure of it, so anyone who has anything to do with you in your immediate environment and in any environment you've ever existed in with that, now is released from being connected to you with that. Now, it doesn't seem so much. I can tell you, well, as I saw it, I suddenly realized that it was something tremendous, because it gets acknowledged and it's moving, and those people at the other end receive what is acknowledged from you. Suddenly you've let it go and they receive it, and they are becoming freer, freer, freer. And one of these days, maybe, babies will be born that will not have the so-called bank, will not have the reactive mind. I want to have one lifetime, maybe my future parents sit here in this audience, I want to have one lifetime. You can be as rough as you like, ever my father is, and as tough as you like, ever my mother is, so long as you are being you and there's no reactivity. I want to have one life from birth, as long as it goes, totally free from having to have those basics, which they are ingrained as you come into existence and superimposed over and over and over and over again. I think maybe each one of us do. So let's then, with the knowledge we have of being infinite creators, work ourselves towards that sort of lifetime, if you want one. Let's work ourselves towards that sort of lifetime and just see what we will do. Then let's sort of try and put a stop on it, because the moment we predict what we will do, we've already imprisoned the future and suppressed it. You see, don't put anything there, just move into it, but remove before you move those things which might be stopped, which will impair the quality of your future. So look at your creations. They will all be beautiful, but some of them might just have a little sad twist on them that is still somehow or another creeping into the pattern of your everyday existence. I still find things in mine, and it's helped me tremendously to, people, Jack and I audit each other every now and again, other people look at me, and suddenly somebody just looks at me, and I feel some sort of loveliness, and suddenly I leap, like as Roger says, I sort of leap out in love, suddenly somebody's opened another door for me, and I fall in love so easily most of the time. But suddenly someone just opens the door and I get that extra zip, you know, and I'm off into the eyes and everything else and dancing in the stars. And it's something, it's like, it's just people do this for each other. And it isn't a matter of, oh, let's go and jump into bed quickly. It sometimes has nothing to do with that. That's an okay game. But you can go way out into the stars, you know. You can be all around here. You can be looking together at what's going on. And you can, collectively, generate across this planet so much sanity. And so much that eventually you'll find that the wars and things like this will just quietly not be there anymore. Because man will find much higher levels of game to play. But again, let's remove these things that stop us, not by revolution, by evolution and re-evolution. Because you only get revolution to the extent that you are denying yourself, or people are being denied the tool of evolution, what you can be. So reactivity doesn't come into it. It's only later on, when you have created the safer space, and you become a little bit inert about things, say, that what you keyed out, the reactive mind or whatever, gradually comes back because you didn't erase it and you didn't look at it. We ran away from one country, we went to a new country. Now, we have no right to run around contaminating things because we're not cleaning ourselves up. If we want to move, for instance, Jack was making the point about this planet being overpopulated one of these days, by which time our people of Earth will have quite easily have created the spaceships by which we can go to other planets. But before we go to another planet, something all new and shining, like this one has been for many of us the pearl of the universe, before we go to another one, let's make sure that we're all cleaned up, you know, in relation to these things which prevent us from being as infinitely creative as we might be, and that to a large extent impair the quality of our creations. So, you know as well as I do that you are infinite creators. I've been roaring my head off, but another thing, for me this is a shared experience. Like, the noise is coming out of this body, but a lot of what I'm saying is actually coming like this. And for me, these sorts of things are shared experiences. As you open the doors for me to say this or say that or say something more, so it becomes more and more and more the ease of, say, reciprocity, of me relating to you, you relating to me. What I'd like you all to do, just very simply, is recall a pleasure moment. And just pass it to the person next to you. Right, and now receive one back from the person that you passed it to. You'll feel something. Anyway, these are just little things, because then you can go a little bit further and you can say, create a pleasure moment. But let's then, as it's our future, you see, in the evolving world, a strong people do not require strong leaders. Now, this is a quote from a movie I was watching, but I loved it. A strong people do not require strong leaders. You see, like, government, as it was originally intended, was this way, going out in concentric circles with those who have to do the administration. Yeah, doing the administration and relating and relating and relating. Not this way. Because you are the power, but to the extent that you ignore the fact that you are the power, you the people, or we the people, are the power of Earth, to the extent we acknowledge that, we force people into that sort of structure. We force people into taking more and more and more responsibility. So the structure goes that way, with one person sitting at the top, or two, or three maybe, or a council. Well now the council, if we were taking full responsibility and being as infinitely creative as we should, those people would have a much happier life, because they'd be able to have many more friends, they'd be able to do the administration so much more easily, they'd be able to make laws through understanding of people. You see, and last year I wrote President Nixon a letter in which I said to him, because we were in communication whilst I was working at the United Nations, and I said to him, the thing is this, if we do not look at the basic thing, I said, we keep on trying to make laws for people, but we do not know what people are. So if we do not take the trouble to know that commodity which we are governing and making laws for, our laws are going to be false solutions, and each solution, each false solution is going to become a problem. So you're going to keep on having to make law after law after law to handle the fact that this law, which was not a true solution, became a problem, and so people broke out of that. So now you've got to make a law to handle that one, and then you've got to make a law to handle this one, and a law to handle that one, It goes on and on and on and on and on through the centuries, because in all the centuries of legislation, those who made the laws, and that is our responsibility too, because we do not help them enough and do not flow enough power to them, realizing that we are the power, they have never looked into what are they making laws for. Now, if you know the commodity for which you are making laws, in other words, human beings, it becomes 1,000 times more simple. You make those laws which undercut all the unnecessary ones and which encourage man to be as creative as he can be. So then let's, you know, look at our future, take some responsibility for it, realize that we can, through our ability to create, change such things as wars, and we can, and just go on creating that, knowing that every day, any one of you, if we were alone somewhere, remember a time when you were together like now, and you realized that you could be this creative, and you could generate, and this way we will never be separated. And at any one moment of time, any one of you suddenly finding it a bit difficult, you realize what you are doing, and suddenly you realize you can create something creative, something fantastically, say, better than is the existing condition, and immediately you will have agreement from every one of us here who has agreed tonight that this is a possibility. And you will have it just coming straight away, and everything that you are doing is being reinforced. You do not again have to be collectively gathered together like this. Because so long as we have agreed that we can do these things, no matter where we are with our bodies, there will be that agreement. And as it's like picking up a telephone, the line is there. The telephone line is there, but you don't always communicate on it. But when you pick it up and you speak, it goes right through and the guy receives it at the other end. Then you put your telephone down and the telephone line is not being used. Well, virtually the same as here. We have connected now. And all of you have connected with each other. I hope that you have anyway. Because there is something lovely ahead for man, and we can do it. And so just keep your lines there, and every time you want, you might be far away and you think you're having a bit of a problem, just pick up your telephone, your own private one, and dial the number of whoever you want to be in with, and set up that level of agreement that moves again into, you know, sort of the infinite creativity of the future. And this basically boils down to, look at those things which are preventing you from knowing yourself, find your intentions, and then know yourself in it. I was writing something, I was trying to write some very simple axioms that really made life straight for me and for people as I saw people. And there's one that I've always loved, you know, and I thought this is tremendous, and I began to write it as the 13th axiom. Know thyself and the truth shall set ye free. And I was going to write it and suddenly I thought, heavens, I better stop that one. I mean, it's know thyself and you shall set yourself free. And there are many of us who will be around helping each other. And it will be the reciprocity of this that gets us into that wonderful future that is there. Because this time, and I think we like it, we made it, not nearly made it. This time we made it. There are too many of us aware of what is there and what we are. And just this time we made it. And I, you know, hope that that is so for you, and I hope that you will generate that amongst all the people that you have anything to do with. Because we have made it. The truth is there. It has come out through all the things that man ever put on the winds before, the things that Ron Hubbard put together. And it doesn't matter how far it takes you, you take it as far as you will go with it. And then be free to move on. And in this way, you will generate love to that man so that he too can become free. Anyone who's sitting there holding the doors to freedom, no, he's not free. And he requires help. He requires the help of you going ahead and utilizing what